There's a time and place to read the Bible, yes. There's a time and place to find out what all the experts are saying about this issue or that issue. But there's also a time to trust your own experiences and pay attention to what you really think and really believe.
That's the Reverend Dr. Scott Koglaser. I'm Peter Wallace. Join us for some conversation and a powerful message of faith. Today, on Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, here's our host, Peter Wallace, to introduce this week's speaker.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome back this week the Reverend Dr. R. Scott Koglaser, who has served as Senior Minister of First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, California since 2008. Ordained by the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, Scott earlier served at the University Christian Church in Fort Worth, Texas, and the Riverside Church of New York City. He earned his graduate degrees from Christian Theological Seminary in Indianapolis, Indiana. Scott is the author of several books, including his most recent, A Dictionary of Faith. Scott, we're glad to have you back with us.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Peter.
Last week, we got to know you a bit as a spiritual leader and author, but now let's talk about the church you serve, First Congregational Church of Los Angeles. Since 2008, you've led the church through a remarkable period of renewal and growth with a significant outreach to the city. How would you characterize the people of your church and their witness in the world?
Well, first of all, it's a wonderful place in that we have this beautiful building. It's a Gothic cathedral, and so the architecture speaks to us each and every week. I think it's not just one of the great church buildings in Los Angeles. I think it's one of the great church buildings in the country. And so to be there each and every week, that's a great thing. But of course, church is much more than a building. It's about people. And one thing that we keep seeing happening in our community is that it's a growing, diverse kind of people. We have people from different walks of life, people who have great love for the arts, for literature, for film. We're in Los Angeles, after all. And so they bring all of those kinds of interest and love, and they somehow are integrating that with their experience of faith. And of course, it's also a great place for music. It's home to the world's largest church pipe organ. And so we have some of the greatest music in the country right now in terms of organ music, as well as our choir and other kinds of concerts that we have. So it's a kind of place where people are really invited to come and integrate their life and their faith.
First Congregational is the oldest Protestant church in the city of Los Angeles. Give us an overview of the history of the church.
Well, the history of the church is interesting. It had locations in Los Angeles, different kinds of locations, until about 80 years ago or so. In the heart of the Depression, the church decided to build this amazing Gothic cathedral. Most people, when they think of a congregational church, they imagine the little white church on the village green, a simple little building. But for some reason, there was a vision there to have this great cathedral, that it would be in Los Angeles. And so the church is located between downtown and Hancock Park, and it is just a beautiful example of Gothic architecture. Historically, the church has gone through different types of experience. Like a lot of Protestant churches, it reached its heyday in the 1950s and 60s, and then it went into a period of decline. And that decline has been happening for many, many years now. Until a few years ago when I arrived, the church had really just dwindled. And part of that was some self-inflicted wounds, and part of that was just a changing world, a changing Los Angeles. When I interviewed for the position, I thought, and I still think, that something good could happen in this amazing building. And so we've been bringing together, we've been opening the doors of our church as wide as we know how to open them, and that's been a great thing for us. I think people in LA now know that if they're looking for an open, progressive, joyful place, they can turn to First Church, and they will find that there.
Well, your sermon this week draws from the Hebrew Scriptures, Exodus chapter 3. First, set the scene for us. Where are we in the story of Moses?
Well, with the story of Moses, we are now at this place where Moses, in essence, is receiving his call from God. And especially in the Hebrew Scriptures, that story of call is such an interesting thing, because call is applied not really just to quote-unquote ministers or prophets. Call can be anyone who senses God is calling us to do something, move in a certain direction. And so Moses is in the desert. He has this experience in the desert of seeing this plant or shrub burning, but it is not consumed. And it becomes for him a point of meditation and prayer, and also a point of insight for his calling to lead the people out of Egypt and toward the Promised Land.
Would you read the passage for us?
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that it is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Thus you shall go to the Israelites and say, 'The Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this my title for all generations.'"
Scott, your sermon is entitled "Trusting Your Experience." Thanks again for being with us.
It's great to be with you. I want to suggest today that one of the most essential dimensions to the life of faith is finding a way to trust our personal experiences. We may not be able to trust them absolutely, because sometimes what we think or feel or even believe can be wrong. We always have to acknowledge that. But there is something so essential to listening to our personal experiences, discerning what they mean, and deciding how to move forward with our lives.
And that is especially true in terms of paying attention to our personal experiences with God. In many ways, that's exactly what you see happening with Moses in this story from the book of Exodus. Moses is walking in the desert, and he has a profound religious experience. There's a bush, a kind of wild shrub growing off in the distance. But as he walks closer to the shrub, he begins to see that it's on fire. Yet this burning bush is not consumed. It burns, but does not burn up. It continues to burn and blister, throwing off sparks and tangled flames of fire and heat, always the intensity of heat in the desert. Moses looks at it, observes it, but soon his looking becomes a kind of meditation, even a prayer. It's important to note that sometimes seeing, really seeing, can become a profound spiritual experience. Moses begins to sense that there is more here than a desert campfire. He watches and listens and feels. And then he begins to sense that within this burning bush is nothing less than the presence of God. Maybe he begins to feel that God is like light. Maybe that God is like heat. Maybe that God is like a promise that will never be broken. And then he senses that God wants him to do something for the Jewish people, a people trapped and exiled in the foreign land of Egypt. Yes, it was just a walk in the desert. But sometimes when we find the courage to listen, really listen to our experiences, to pay attention to them, we discover there is something much deeper happening. And that was certainly true for Moses. You know the rest of the story. Moses eventually stood up against Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world, and against the nation of Egypt, the most powerful nation in the world. But he was also standing up for the dignity of his people, for the possibility that the people of God might actually come together in such a way that they could become a light to the nations and a source of joy for all people. And so Moses eventually cried out, "Let my people go." And he said it again, "Let my people go." And again and again and again. And go they did, across the desert, through the Red Sea, and eventually into a new land. They were free. But it all started in a lonely desert place with a solitary burning bush and with the openness of one man willing to listen to his own experience. There's a time and place to read the Bible, yes. There's a time and place to consult theologians and read books and go to conferences, yes. There's a time and place to find out what all the experts are saying about this issue or that issue. But there's also a time to trust your own experiences and pay attention to what you really think and really believe and really feel. Parker Palmer, one of the great spiritual teachers of our time, puts it like this. He says, "I must listen to my life and try to understand what it's truly about, quite apart from what I would like for it to be about, or my life will never represent anything real in the world, no matter how earnest my intentions." Yes, listening to our lives is essential, and that's exactly what you see with Moses. In other words, it's not enough to appeal to the authority of Moses or even the authority of Jesus for our spiritual lives. Yes, Moses can be helpful. And as a Christian, the life and teachings of Jesus are essential to me for my guidance and direction. But in the end, I have to find the courage to listen to my experiences, just as Moses and just as Jesus had to find courage to listen to their experiences. Because the truth is, God still burns in the 21st century as a presence of love and insight and compassion. Some conversations you never forget, and I had one of those conversations early on in my ministry. There was a member of my church by the name of Ed. He was such a great guy, smart, talented, a professor at Indiana University. We became friends and had lunch from time to time. We always enjoyed our conversations with one another. But one day was a little different. We were having lunch. It was a spring day. People were outside enjoying the beautiful weather after a long and unusually cold winter. Ed and I sat inside a little cafe that day. And over the course of the conversation, he paused and said, "I have something I really need to share with you." I said, "Of course." And that's when he said it. He said, "I want you to know that I'm gay. And yes, I'm married. And yes, I have a child. But who I really am is a gay man. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But I needed to tell someone. I needed to trust someone. And I really hope we can still be friends." Sitting at that table with him, listening to his story, and yes, looking into his eyes, I knew I was in the presence of something sacred. After all, is there anything more sacred than when we find the courage to tell our story to another human being, and another human being actually takes it in with love and respect? It was as if someone had handed me the largest diamond you could buy from Tiffany's. The conversation was that beautiful, that precious. I remember that moment because I was in the middle of a theological discernment process myself. I had read the passages about same-sex relations in the Bible. I had heard the heated debates and arguments. And I also knew, historically at least, how churches had discerned the issue. But sitting with Ed that day, my friend and church member, Ed, it was no longer a theological issue or a social issue. The issue had become an experience. And in that moment, I found the courage to listen to my own experience. And more than that, I allowed my experience to shape my theology. And so easily and quite naturally, I was able to say to him, "Ed, thank you so much for sharing. I'm honored that you shared with me. I'm touched that you shared with me. And you need to know you will always be a member of our church, and you need to know you can count on me as a friend." From the outside, had you been in that cafe, all you would have noticed that day were two men having lunch together on a spring afternoon in Indianapolis. But like that burning bush in the desert, there's always more to life than meets the eye. I look back on that lunch 30 years ago now, and I will forever cherish his honesty and feeling and my honesty and feeling, and I will always cherish it as a God moment. Sometimes we have to trust our deepest experiences. And not only is it a good thing, it's a God thing. There was a time when it was common to say a woman should not be in ministry. Bible verses were quoted to support that position. Theological arguments raged about this issue, and in some circles of the church today, it is still raging. But none of it makes sense after you meet a woman who is talented and smart and clearly has something to give the church. It's no longer an issue when you meet a woman who has clearly been called by God to a life of ministry. That's when you have to honor experience. And it's also an occasion to dig a little deeper into the meaning underneath certain texts of the Bible. Or, I remember growing up in my small hometown in the Midwest, and if a person went through a divorce, well, that person was considered a morally flawed person and unacceptable to society. including the community of the church. Instead of compassion, the divorcing couple often found shame and guilt. Bible verses were quoted to prove this very point. Yes, the Bible was used to condemn. Yet none of it makes sense when you have a real experience, like going through a divorce yourself, and you know, you're still a good person. Maybe even a better person because of it. Or maybe you have a close friend who has had to leave a marriage and you really know that your friend is still a good person and has so much to give this world. When we have these kinds of real life experiences, not only can they change our theology, they should change our theology. Trusting our experience is that important. I love this story of Moses in the book of Exodus, not so much because he became a powerful religious leader and a revered figure in Judaism. Oh, I admire that to be sure. But I love the story because it all started with an experience. He could have walked by. He could have ignored it. He could have explained it away. He could have asked someone else what they thought about it. But no. Moses mustered enough courage and openness to listen to his experience, to linger with it, ponder it. And in it all, he discovered God's call for his life. And that's why personal experience is so important. It's not so much that every moment is a message, but that every message has its moment. And we only have such moments when we find the faith and courage to pay attention to them. Would you pray with me? With eyes wide open, O God, we seek to live our lives. Help us to pay attention to our experiences, not merely to look but to see, not merely to believe but to feel, not merely to know but to understand. Depth calls to us each day, every day, and the small moments of the day. Help us, O God, to find you, burning and alive and fresh. Help us to find you in all our experiences. Amen.
Our preacher today was the Reverend Dr. R. Scott Colglazier, Senior Pastor of First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, California. For a free transcript of his message, Trusting Your Experience, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Day 1 depends on the financial contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. Again, our address is Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. And remember, to listen again to today's program, share a sermon transcript, or watch inspiring videos, visit us online at day1.org. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week on Day One, we're honored to welcome the Reverend Dr. Alec Evans, Senior Pastor of Second Presbyterian Church in Richmond, Virginia. His message is entitled, From Enmity to Community. Be sure to tune in. This is Sherry Miller. Day One is supported almost entirely by donations from our faithful listeners and from churches and individuals who believe in our message. If you're among those who find meaning and inspiration in our weekly broadcasts, please consider making a generous financial offering to keep Day One on the air and fulfilling its mission. In almost 70 years, we have not missed one single weekly broadcast, but we ask for your help to ensure our future. Please send your gift to Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. That's 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Or call us at 1-888-411-DAY1. Or give securely online at dayone.org. On behalf of everyone at Day One, we wish you all God's blessings. Scott Colglazier offers some final reflections on his sermon today with our host, Peter Wallace.
Scott, you make a strong case for paying attention to our personal experiences, trying to discern what they mean and deciding how to move forward with our lives in light of them. And that's especially true in terms of paying attention to our personal experiences with God, you said. How can we do that more intentionally and meaningfully?
Well, I think one way we do it is when we set aside a little time each day or each week and we pray, or we might read the Bible or some other source of devotional reflection, just pausing and reflecting and quieting ourselves and going to that calm, quiet center within. That's the place where we begin to hear what we really think, what we really feel, and we begin connecting that to God. In the history of the church, they are sometimes called spiritual practices. And these practices are really just healthy habits to nurture those deeper places within.
And Moses did this when he encountered God in the burning bush. And it took courage, you said, to really listen to that experience. But it changed the world. What do you think might happen to us if we had the courage to follow his example?
Well, I think we would be different people within ourselves. I think we would feel closer to God, more connected to the universe, the source, whatever you want to say. And I also think we would be more connected to one another. Because when we connect to one another in a deeper kind of way, then it's not simply a social interaction. It becomes a human connection. And any kind of human connection is really a sacred thing. And yet, it all has to be nurtured, and we have to pay attention to it.
Scott, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I hope people will trust their experiences just a little bit more, that they will pay attention. To me, the essence of faith is opening our eyes and paying attention. If we will just do that, our life and our faith will truly be rich.
Scott Colglazier, thank you for being with us.
It's been great to be with you. Thank you, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.